Hi, and welcome to Brought to the Table. Today we have Diana Schulberg, myself, Carter Van Huss, Caitlin Phillips, and Scott Pruitt. We are missing Ian today because he was lazy.
It's true.
And, you know,
he's bad at setting up his internet.
Just kind of bad at
He refuses to do it.
He's just kind of like, well, I'm not doing that, so there's a fun time for us. So this is a group of friends who likes to talk about stuff, and today we're going to talk about two more things than usual. Normally we split into two groups of two with one freeloader, but this week we've decided to take a little bit of a different tact and instead split into individual groups. That I guess they're not groups at that point, huh?
Oh, well. I'm a group unto myself.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have groups of one today, so that's fun. And we all brought our own topic so that nobody has to talk to each other. And that's the best part.
Yeah, we got a crowded table tonight. It was like a potluck of topics.
We're all in like cubicles. We can't see each other.
Because that's the only thing that prevents people from seeing each other.
Because we so normally see each other.
That's true.
Yeah.
The only thing that's keeping me from seeing Scott right now is a wall. That's it. Nothing else.
I mean, several walls. How technical do you want to get?
In the curvature of the earth, maybe?
Oh, I can do a question. All right. Okay, and I want you guys to answer this seriously. If you... Because I feel like it's very telling. If you could be a dessert, what would you be?
You guys want to know my instant response?
Is it butter?
Yeah.
Ice cream?
Please.
Oh, my
no.
God.
No, but like it's very telling. It's telling. Like some people want to be like a cheese board, or some people want to be
a cheese
like
board
just a
for
nice
dessert.
Like, mint.
Cheese board for dessert. Yeah,
that's a very it's a very European thing I discovered. I wanted a dessert menu, and they
no
handed
cheese
me a
on
cheese
it, just
board.
The board.
All right,
I was very upset.
Just the board. To
just
hit
the board.
Friends with, you know.
Yeah.
No, but it's telling. Like, if I was a dessert, I feel like I personally would be a cherry pie, because cherries are tart and sweet, but they're also, like, very solid and sturdy, and I feel like pie describes me very well, because it's also pretty, but also pretty solid.
This is also good, because I also hate pie, so good to go.
I mean, Carter, we've hated each other with a burning passion for years, we've just never told anyone, so it's good
that
we're
getting this out. Have you ever listened to me speak?
Mm-hmm.
See, my answer is just chocolate ice cream, but I can't really explain it other than I like
good
chocolate
as hell.
Ice cream.
I mean, for you, I think chocolate.
Yeah,
cream,
there you
chocolate
go,
ice
Scott.
Cream is the
chocolate
devil,
ice cream
but...
is actually terrible.
Well,
thank you, Scott.
Oh my God, how about an ice cream sandwich? I'm a portable dessert.
A portable dessert, though, in my backpack. You know,
ice cream sandwich. Take it for later,
Scott. Wait, what's your dessert? What dessert are you, Scott?
What dessert am I, or what dessert do I like? Those are very different questions.
What dessert, but either one. What do you, how do you want to roll?
I think that you are.
Yeah,
I think
you are. I'll think of a better one.
I am brownie mix brownies.
Yeah? Why?
Yeah, because I'm like really lazy, but I'm reasonably good.
That's good.
I love it. Title of my sex tape.
Title of your sex tape?
I love it, Scott.
Hold up. Rewind.
Dig it.
Title of anyone's
sex
tape?
I dig it.
I'm very lazy, but I'm reasonably good. I think it's everyone.
I mean, like, mood, but whatever.
I can't. That's just too good a role. That's just too good.
I do like how you didn't say title of his sex tape, but title of yours.
Yeah, you did just say yours.
Eh, it was a misspeak.
You're
I'm just owning
live
it.
Live up to that? All right.
I fucking commit.
It sounds like you don't.
Nah, that's accurate.
But I'm all right. Good job, Scott. That was a really good answer.
That was good, Scott.
Caitlin, do you have one?
Nah, you go. I'll think of one.
Shit.
Should I have thought of a different question?
No, I just haven't thought about
it. I thought this would be cute.
I've been joking with y'all, chuckle fucks.
The name of our band. Instead of the Wiggles, or the Chuckle Fucks.
Okay, let's see. I'm... I'm gonna go... Oh, this is good. This is good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, that's the opposite of what I want. No. Okay, I got it. I'm gonna go with chocolate cookie dough ice cream, because... You hate most of it, but occasionally there's some good shit in there.
Oh my god.
Carter!
This only works if you're like me and hate chocolate ice cream.
And love cookie dough. And just
fucking love cookie dough. So that, I thought that
I'm
was pretty
dying.
Good.
It's funny.
I love it.
It's also accurate.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't like it because Carter's not funny, and that is funny.
Damn it!
Wrecked. Revoked.
Caitlin, say something. Say anything.
I'm an ice cream sandwich because I can be either humble or
and
fancy.
I put you in my back pocket.
I can travel
Wait,
with it.
Do you put ice cream in your pocket,
good,
Carter?
And she's good on hikes.
The jokes. God.
How many pairs of pants do you have to buy?
I said it was a portable dessert earlier. A lot. I keep putting ice cream in them.
Listen.
You're like the Dippin' Dots. Those
you
are like portable
desserts.
You
in Napoleon Dynamite where he's got the tots in his pocket?
But with
I'm
ice cream.
Like that, except for
tots
lemon
ice cream.
Cream. He's like, hey, can I have some of those?
I love it.
And then I have a handful of soopy ice cream that is kind of like plopped down in your hand.
Yep.
Various stages of melting in all of your different pockets on your cargo pants.
Yeah, you would think I'd just get smart and like get an insulated pair of pants for the pocket
cargo
part because that's something that exists. But I just keep on rolling in my car. That's why you don't ever see me wearing cargo pants, because I'm always in a state of trying to buy new ones. They can't keep them in stock at the Kohl's.
Nope. You walk in and they're like, shit, he's back already.
He's like, what's up, motherfuckers? This one was a Neapolitan.
I haven't learned my lesson. This one was from Monster Cookies.
All right. So we've done it. We've done a good, fun little question there. Diana, what have you brought to the table? It looks like it comes in a box, a small one, and it looks like it might have a disc in there. What is it?
It's actually a horror game called Until Dawn.
Enunciate that word, please.
A what game? I didn't like that either.
Take it again.
Okay. So I'm going to be talking about a horror game called Until Dawn. It's for the PS4. It came out in 2015. It's a pretty straightforward plot. It's pretty much any horror movie. It's, you know, a bunch of kids are like, God, you know, this cabin on a lonely mountain in the middle of a snowstorm in the middle of nowhere seems like a great place to just chill. Am I right, boys?
And have sex, because that makes the devil appear.
Yes. To be fair, though, like, the first girl who initiates quote-unquote sex gets dragged out a fucking window by a demon thing, and you're like, Jesus.
No, I think all we right. just determined it was the devil. Come on, keep on your fucking game.
Jesus, why you do me like this?
Because he decided not to take the wheel and just take the girl. And so the plot is pretty straightforward. What I really wanted to talk about is I think Until Dawn is one of the most watchable games or games to stream, and I think it is fabulous for that reason. It doesn't have any components that incorporate, like, maybe a PC game would with, like, Twitch or something like that, where you get specific audience incorporation, but I actually think this game is one of the best games to watch a favorite streamer or YouTuber play or what have you. And I'm gonna talk about why, because I have watched this game through several times, and I never get tired of it. It's really good. So it was only released for the PS4, so it's pretty limiting, and, even if you decide, man, this is a great game, not many people go out and buy an entire new game system just for one game. It doesn't happen very often, and so, you know, PS4 did a really good job of, like, solidly being slam dunk game only for our system. But what comes out of that is some streamers and stuff will stream this game, and it's really amazing to watch. It's got a pretty solid story. You get this really great discovery element to the story. And as I'm gonna go on, I'm just gonna say right now, I'm probably gonna start spoiling the game, so sorry guys. And if you decide, you're welcome to just skip past my section if you don't want to spoil it. Long story short, just watch it, play it, live your life, my dudes.
Skip another, like, 6 minutes or so.
Yeah. And so, it's a really great game to watch. The story is pretty solid. There's a lot of good discovery elements in the sense that, you get the setup of the initial mystery that's pretty standard for, you know, kind of a horror game or horror movie where a bunch of kids are in a cabin and you think, oh man, you know, people have gone missing. There's this psycho, who knows? But as you develop on, you get this wonderful kind of bait and switch and you realize there's a much more kind of supernatural, kind of a lot darker element that's going on throughout the game. And it's really interesting to watch that develop. And part of the great part of that is the interesting characters that go with it. Because the characters fit a lot of the standard slots that you would see in a movie or a game like this. But what makes it interesting is that you have various choices throughout the game. And those choices actually affect the interactions and the relationships of characters later on. So you could say it's a horror dating sim, basically, because you gotta make sure your relationships with the other characters are good, otherwise they will leave you to fucking die in the snow and be butchered. And it's hot damn, it's some good times. Like, there's one instance in the game where you have the opportunity to look at a different player's phone. And if you do, they are less likely to trust you later, which means later on in the game, when shit starts going down, they're like, well, I don't follow your, like, plan. That's a dumb plan. I'm going to go out on my own and do my own thing because I've learned you're an untrustworthy person. And they have the opportunity to die because of that, because of a very simplistic choice at the beginning of the game, when it's kind of basically just going through a tutorial. And so I love that you get that element of relationship building and interrelationship-ness between the characters as an actual effect later on in the game. Like, there's at one point where you have this false dilemma of, like, ah, man, I either gotta shoot me or shoot the person in front of me, and depending on what choice you make, the gun is full of blanks, so none of you will die, but that determines whether or not that person will open the door when you're running away from the monster later, and or lock it and leave you to die in the snow. So beyond just, like, the fact that the characters are so fluid, depending on initial early choices that you wouldn't think about would have any kind of importance, there's actually a lot of really great voice actors involved in this. You have Rami Malek from Mr. Robot. You have Hayden Panettiere from Heroes, Save the Cheerleader, Save the World. You have Brett Dalton from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And they actually have done a fabulous job of making these characters look so close to their actors. Like, you can tell which actor played who because they are, like, dead on. It's pretty impressive. And of course, they're all good actors in general, so the fact that they've conveyed so many of these facial features over really brings a lot to the game in general. Additionally, it's a good time. It's the visuals are really good. You get a lot of facial expression. When you pause the screen on occasion, you will see, like, the emotional drainage that's happening with the character that you're playing and, like, all the shits that's gone down. And part of that is this game has a really good horror element to it where the shock and the surprise and the, like, jumps and, like, the nerves, the game does a really good job of doing this, and what's great is it conveys really well over into somebody just watching it as opposed to playing it. You basically see all the controls on screen, so there's a couple of QTE moments, and, like, you can't miss these. I've seen somebody get put into a wood chipper because they missed one QTE by, like, mistake, and it's this wonderful, unpredictable, crazy element. And then that conveys into great shock of, like, we missed one QTE and a kid died because of it. And, like, the streamer is freaking out and the audience is panicking because we all want to get these kids home safe. And so all of this really bundles together into the perfect storm of watching this. It's like a much more interactive horror game, horror movie experience because, working on the premise that you enjoy watching other people, YouTubers, streamers, play video games, it's really wonderful to go through this story, through this discovery, through this shock, through basically all of this with a streamer you really enjoy. There's a lot of great variety. There's a lot of choices that you don't think would affect anything but have large ramifications or that really pay off or you find out have bigger things. Like, at some point, you have the option of locking up a bat just because, like, it's out of place. And you want to, like, clean up. But if you do, you won't have the option of using it later when the murderer chases you through the basement and you're fucked. But you wouldn't... I don't know. It's just... It's great because you also watch a lot of streamers make the reasoning behind these choices. Like, oh, well, like, I don't want to trip over this bat if I'm running from someone, so I'll just put it away. You find, like, ah, fuck. I needed that to fight a guy. So if you were... If you're gonna make a roll and watch this... I'll wrap up by giving you my recommendations. Scary Game Squad, which is hosted by Jesse Cox on YouTube or The Completionist. You can find their playthrough of it on their channels. It is a wild ride. It is hilarious, and it's great because it's four people debating literally every choice, and it's just so funny. Or Sam and Dodger play through it when they announced their engagement a while back. They play through it, and it's adorable because... Dodger is known for getting so many characters killed, and she's so heartbroken every time somebody dies. It's hilarious and wonderful. So, Until Dawn. Watch it. Play it. Give it a go. I would recommend it.
Rad.
Rad.
Alright, cool. Oh, I'm dying.
Just kidding. I'm not dead. Alf isn't even in the fucking building. Okay, so that was really good. Thank you, Diana. So just a real quick question about that. It sounds a lot like the Telltale games. Is that a reasonable comparison if you've played any of those?
I kind of, in the sense that you have these kind of bigger story decisions, but Telltale games don't often involve quite as many QTEs or quite as many kind of like search for clues elements that Until Dawn does. Usually Telltale is focused on a lot of plot development and QTE only as a kind of a breakup in that monotony. Until Dawn has aspects where you are exploring an area as a character, and you may not be fighting, but you're hunting for clues. And the more clues, the more totems, the more things you find, it better informs your choices for later. So kind of, but I feel like Until Dawn gives you a lot more room to kind of discover it on your own.
And for those of you who aren't savvy in video game terms, QTE stands for Quick Time Event, in which a button prompt will appear on the screen and you have to press it within a given amount of time.
They're so stressful.
Okay, great. I think, you good?
Yep.
So I guess it's my turn, huh?
Unfortunately.
All right, well, fuck you too, I guess.
Yeah, boy.
Scott, just the Eeyore of the group.
Unfortunately.
Okay, so today what I'm bringing as my solo topic is a summertime favorite of mine called horchata. Horchata is a really super tasty summer drink that I absolutely love. And when I start describing it, you're going to be like, that sounds like not fun. That sounds weird and gross. But then trust me, it's not. It's really, really good. So it
sounds weird and gross, just like murder.
Important question. I thought you could only drink it in December.
Well, let me tell you something. That joke that Caitlin just made is a reference to the Vampire Weekend song of the same name, Horchata, and the first line and many subsequent lines in it are in December drinking horchata, and that line is supposed to sort of essentially just like set up juxtaposition, because in December drinking horchata, not really a thing that happens, unless you're in the Southern Hemisphere, then it probably does happen.
But you just drink a lot more horchata than I do.
That too. So it is a sweet, milky drink. It's made by steeping a plant-based substance for a very long time, generally overnight or even over the course of several days, and then adding in some extra spices or flavors or other ingredients. And that sounds like a very vague description, and that's because it's a very vague drink. It's one of those things where, like, you see it and you're like, that's probably horchata. They call this horchata, or you can sort of bundle things in to the horchata family of drinks, I guess. But the reason that it's so vague is because it's so varied all across the world. It originally comes from Africa, where and I mean literally thousands of years ago, people were grinding up tiger nuts and steeping them for a very long time and then drinking that with extra flavors and spices and whatnot. From there, it made its way to Spain in 1000 CE, where it became very popular in Valencia, which is, as some people would know, a rather warm place in Spain, which is why this drink became popular. And at this point, it was still made primarily with tiger nuts. there, it's remained very popular even till today. And from that point, it did make its way over to the Americas, primarily in Central and South America, where a variety of plant substances and grains were used to make this drink in a variety of different ways. The way that I've ingested it the most, that's a terrible way to phrase that. Oh, goodness. The way that I've partaken.
The way that I, a real human boy, have ingested this substance.
Yeah, the way that I, a real human boy, have ingested this substance into my guts is generally through what I believe is the Mexican preparation. And I think I've only ever had it, like, not made by myself, like, two or three times. Like, I generally just make it myself because it's actually very easy. But it did spread all across South and Central America, from Mexico down to Brazil and all up, everywhere in between.
All up in there.
All up in there. So I'm going to kind of just cover two recipes real quick. And I won't go into, like, actual descriptions, or maybe I will. Who knows? So the Spanish version, the version that's been around since 1000 CE, that's been made very popular in Valencia, I believe in Spain it is actually a vegan drink. There's no animal byproducts that are added into it. In this one, you grind up tiger nuts and you let them steep in water overnight. And then afterwards, you strain it out and you mix it with water and you create your desired consistency with it. And then you just add lemon zest and cinnamon, and that's it. And cinnamon doesn't sound like a very summery ingredient, but the whole drink is very light and refreshing. Oftentimes, it is served alongside agua fresca, which is another very light summery drink that is popular in a lot of Spanish-speaking countries. And so it's something that's very popular in Valencia in particular because, like I said, it's very hot. That's one recipe for it. I don't think I've ever had that recipe. It sounds delicious. But the recipe that I make most of the time is with rice, actually, instead of tiger nuts. This is what I believe to be Mexican horchata for the most part. It involves grinding up rice, or in my case, I just blend it, and then steeping that overnight. And then afterwards, straining that, adding milk, sugar, cinnamon, and vanilla, which it does add a little bit more weight with the milk, or you could add almond milk if you wanted to keep it vegan. And then the cinnamon and vanilla just serve to add more flavor. I'm a big fan of using sweetened condensed milk. Now, that's actually a new development for me, personally, because it gives it a little bit more weight. But, you know, with these two recipes, like, the concept remains the same. It's just a ground-up grain or something that's been steeped for a long time and then strained out, and then maybe a couple of extra ingredients added. Across South America, you'll get other ingredients in place of the tiger nuts or rice, like sesame seeds, melon seeds actually are another big one. Sesame seeds, melon seeds, almonds are another big one. So combining that with almond milk itself would actually probably be really good. And a whole bunch of other plants. Calabash seeds, I believe. I'm pretty sure that's a plant. Those are some of the other ingredients that this could sort of be built off of. If you've heard horchata and you weren't thinking of the Vampire Weekend song, but it still rings a bell, it's probably because of a very popular mixed drink. It's a prepared drink called rumchata, which is, as it sounds, a mixture of rum and some semblance of what some people are calling horchata. I would not call it that.
Nope.
But it's exactly what it sounds like. But I don't put alcohol in any of my horchata because it's just a nice thing to have after dinner.
What got you into horchata, and, like, what was the first time you had it? How'd you feel?
So I honestly cannot remember how I found horchata. I do know that it was before I listened to the Vampire Weekend song of the same name. I do distinctly remember looking through the track listing and seeing, oh, horchata. I drink that. And... and then listening
I'm
to
drinking
the song.
That right now.
I know her. Hey, I know her.
They were roommates.
I have no idea. I think I literally just, like, found it on the internet, like, while I was scrolling through Facebook or something, just saw a recipe and was like, oh, that sounds really good. And then that's my voice. And then, you know, made it and really liked it and continued to make it and forced my friends and family to drink it ever since.
It was good. Well, it is good.
I'm glad you don't think that my recipe's deteriorated. But yeah.
Only the first recipe was good.
Wow.
Okay. Everything else from there downhill.
So I found my recipe just now on my phone. And I saved this recipe to my phone on May
4th, 2013. Whew.
Wow.
So it's been
time
a while.
Capsule.
Yeah, wait.
2013? It's a horchata time capsule.
That was freshman year of college. End of it. Checks out. I don't remember making this in freshman year of college, but whatever. So what I do is I take 1 cup of uncooked long grain white rice, and I blend it up in the blender with 5 cups of water until it just starts to break up. So essentially so that most pieces of rice have essentially been like chopped in half or something. Okay, and then I just let that sit overnight. I put it in the fridge, cover it overnight, and let it steep. Occasionally I might go into my fridge and like, you know, stir it around just a little bit, but I don't think that actually does anything. It just kind of makes me feel better about prepping it. So whatever. And then what I do is I take it out of the fridge, I strain out the rice, and then I add a 1/2 cup of milk, 1/2 cup of vanilla extract, 1/2 tablespoon. Ooh, nope. Nope. Roll that one back. Not a half cup.
I then kill myself with vanilla extract.
I then become the Pillsbury Doughboy. No. I add 1/2 cup of milk, 1/2 tablespoon of vanilla extract, 1/2 tablespoon of cinnamon, and 2/3 cup of white sugar. And then you mix it all up. And once that sugar is dissolved, which does take a minute because it is cold, it's ready to serve. Like, that's it. Add some ice if you want. I've heard a lot of different people that I actually know to take a different take on this. I had one friend substitute out both the sugar and the milk for sweetened condensed milk. I've been playing around with that myself. I've heard people add in cloves, which sounds really good. And so, yeah,
there's cloves.
Do you like cloves?
I feel like I don't. I could be making it up, though.
I think you are. But yeah, like I said, super simple and super good. So next time you're having a summer outdoor pool gathering, just do that. All right, Caitlin, you're up.
I'm going to be talking about a specific song by the band Nine Inch Nails, because I'm predictable and I like Nine Inch Nails.
I mean, I'm for 8 Inch, but you do. You live your life, my friend.
Listen, yeah. We all know that the longer the nails are, the better. That was a bad
Carter,
joke.
Carter, you don't have to paint them.
I was going to make some joke about, like, that 1 inch really matters to me, but they're nails. My experience to Nine Inch Nails is a little different than I think the generic experience is. It's normally like, yes, I've heard Closer. But for me, it was that my aunt and uncle gave me a mix CD of just various techno music that included The Warning, a Real World remix, so not the original version. And then also a remixed version of The Hand That Feeds. And I was like, yeah, this band's pretty good based on these two remixes I've heard. And then I got really into Nine Inch Nails and other techno bands. That's not entirely what we're talking about today. We are specifically talking about this song called The Perfect Drug, because it's an insane song, and the more you learn about it, the weirder it gets. It was released May 13th, 1997. It was written for the David Lynch film Lost Highway, and the only American release was on the Lost Highway soundtrack. Even though it was released as a single, like, it didn't make it. Lost Highway is a weird film as well. French-American neo-noir, directed by David Lynch. It is the last film appearances of Robert Blake, Jack Nance, and Richard Pryor, as well as the first film appearance of Marilyn Manson, as in the singer dude. So,
unfortunately, not the last one.
I don't know his filmography. I don't know. The original version does not appear on the American single. It's been included on international singles, though. There's this music video for it that's insane. And I'll get to that in a second. There's a bunch of people have sampled it too. It's like, it's a good song if you listen to it. It's a very long song. It's 5 minutes and 15 seconds, which is kind of wild. Despite being a single, it has never been performed live. A fan did ask if this is because the drum solo in it would make the drummer's arms fell off. And, like, the real-ass drummer responded with, Well, we never rule out the possibility of playing any of the songs live, but it's still a single that's never been performed live in concert. In an interview, Trent Reznor, the Nine Inch Nails man himself, responded to the question of which piece of your own work are you least satisfied with and why, by saying, "The only thing I think I really don't like that much is the Perfect Drug song." Which, why was it a single then, Trent? What were you doing? It was one of those things where you have a week to do a track for a movie, the mindset you kind of adapt in that situation, or I did, was let's go in and experiment and see what happens. And it's not, you know, whatever comes out of it, it's not the end of the world. And what I think came out of it, married with a bloated over-budget video, feels like the least thing I would play to somebody if they said play me, you know, the top 100 songs you've ever written. It wouldn't be in my top 100, so... He, like, really doesn't like it, but it's a good song, and it was a single. Oh, I just can't handle it. It's so weird. The music video for it is insane. When I first saw it, the only thing I could think was that, oh, Trent Reznor looks like Snape. Okay, cool. but he doesn't normally look like Snape. He just does in this video. He normally has short hair. Directed by Mark Romanek and released on January 18th, 1997, inspired by Edward Gorey and a whole bunch of, like, Edwardian themes and costumes. Everything is under blue lighting, except for the drum solo, which is under flashing green lighting. He's, like, drowning. There's fog. There's vines. There's references to art by famous folks. That was a bad way of saying this. There's references to Gustav Klimt's The Kiss, as well as a scanning machine designed by Frenchman François William. Sorry, I can only speak German, and I can't even speak German very well. There's a lot of absinthe in it. There's a lot of hair and makeup. It's just a weird, 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 weird music video. The 11th official Nine Inch Nails release is The Perfect Drug Versions, a EP, and it consists of 5 different remixes. So again, why does this album that you hate have an EP devoted to it with 5 different remixes? Why? Let's see. As far as how successful it is, on the Canadian singles chart, it hit number 2. On Canadian alternative rock, it hit 2. On U.S. Billboard Hot Singles, that sounds fake, it hit
Hot
17.
Singles Billboard.
Yeah. Hot Singles, they're on this billboard. They're ready for you.
Are you ready for them?
Are you ready for them? So, I know that this was short, but we were told to keep it short. And honestly, I had to talk about this. It's so weird. Oh, here, okay. While I still have the stage, I'm also going to talk about Hurt a little bit. I had a very real argument with my dad a couple years ago as to who Hurt was by. And if he had only listened to me, this wouldn't have had to have been an argument. Hurt is originally by Trent Reznor. It's about heroin. When I was a kid, I embarrassingly thought that it was about self-injury, but no, it's about heroin. And yeah, it is originally by Nine Inch Nails, but Johnny Cash covered it, and he did such a good job, like an extraordinarily good job. There's this quote by Trent Reznor that I don't have pulled up right now, but it's saying, like, tears and goosebumps and feeling like you'd lost your girlfriend or your child or something. Like, that song just isn't my song anymore. But my dad was like, yeah, so Hurt by Johnny Cash. And I'm like, well, no, if you look at who wrote it, that doesn't change. But Johnny Cash's cover of it is, I will admit, better, even though I'm normally, you know, a techno music fanboy who will defend it. I'm like, no, Johnny Cash did this better.
All right. You got anything else for us other than Hurt by Johnny Cash?
Hurt by Johnny Cash.
I've been hurt by Johnny Cash. Came to my house with a fucking bat and hit me with it like 10 times. Okay, so thank you for sharing that with us, Caitlin. I'm gonna have a real good time.
Did you guys find it interesting?
I did. Thank you.
That's all right.
Listen, when you talked about Hurt by Johnny Cash, I was like, Hurt by Johnny Cash?
By Johnny Cash? by Johnny Cash.
Heard by Johnny
you
Cash.
You took my meme and you put it in this podcast?
More likely than you think.
It's more likely than you think. You're doing this just to hurt me.
By Johnny Cash.
Stop it.
I can't. It's in my nature. Scott.
That's my name.
What you got?
Today, I'm pulling a hat out of my hat, and I'm bringing that hat to this table.
Fucking sick.
So today, I'm going to be talking about A Hat in Time, which, if you Google it, or you just find it somewhere, you will see the description as, quote, cute as heck 3D platformer. So, in
sounds
overview...
like Scott.
Thank you. Thank you. In overview, it is a 3D platformer that is cute as heck. It was released last year, October of 2017, developed by Gears for Breakfast. They list their inspirations as Super Mario 64, Banjo-Kazooie, all of your classic kind of early age 3D platformers. It was originally released for PC and Mac. It's been ported to the Xbox One and PlayStation 4 if you, for some reason, are a console gamer. The way I found this game is, like, I saw it linked. It was a Kickstarter campaign in kind of the summer of 2013, or, like, kind of the end of the spring semester. Anyways, their goal was $30,000 because they thought they were, like, some reasonable way into making this game, but they ended up getting $300,000, and so they hit, like, all of their stretch goals plus 20. I think the stretch goals, if you look at them, actually made the game amazing. They got voices for, like, every major interaction, which is much better than games like Yooka-Laylee, where all the like voices, you just see text and ooh, ah, ooh, 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 and it's really terrible.
Oh my god.
They got great, great, great music. Like, the soundtrack is amazing. The guy who did the music for Banjo-Kazooie, Grant Kirkhope, did all of their music. It's really good. They also got an extra level, which, if it's the last level, is also amazing. The general overview of the game, or, like, kind of structure, is it works a lot like a Super Mario game. It's kind of shorter. You have big levels, and within each level you have to collect time pieces, which are like stars or moons or shines or whatever, if you played any of the Mario 3D platformers. And like you might have guessed from the title, there are hats. They described it kind of like a collect-a-thon 3D platformer. You can constantly collect various things, like little credits, tokens, in addition to like the time pieces, which are your kind of level boundary type things. And when you collect some stuff, one of the special things you can build is hats. And the hats give you special abilities that either lets you solve new puzzles, like you'll need them to get through the game, you'll need some of the hats, or they just give you general fun stuff. One example is you get, like, an ice hat, and the ice hat turns you into an ice sculpture, which is basically your ground pound type ability, and there's various things you can use the ground pound for to get you to new locations and stuff like that. There's also other collectibles and upgrades you can kind of get. One of the really fun ones is you can get a scooter that makes you go fast. And that's one of my favorite parts, is there's kind of just, like, fun things to do while you're roaming around the game. So let's get to the good stuff. It has cute graphics, as you would expect from the first description. The artwork is really well done. What I appreciate about the game most is that the game and platforming mechanics feel really, really smooth. I played the beta, and it felt smooth, even though it was kind of buggy. But the feel of the game when you're kind of just moving around and trying to, you know, beat the game or accomplish the goals, feels kind of like Super Mario Sunshine. Like, there's lots of good interactions you can do in the environment, but the platform mechanics are forgiving enough that they're not, like, insanely frustrating. Like, if you've played the, you know, original 2D Marios, you have, like, one jump, and if you miss a jump, you die. Sunshine is more forgiving because you've got, like, a hover pack, so if you mess up by a tiny bit, you can kind of hover back into place. This game has, like, double jumps, and it's slightly slower, I think, than some of the Mario games, so you have more than one chance to mess up, which is fun, and I think they don't just, like, buy your time by making the game frustrating and complicated to do simple tasks. Also similar to Super Mario Sunshine, which I really appreciate, they have these bonus levels. So within a level, you can, like, kind of find a small location or a little cave or something, go in. Sort of spoiler, but you'll find it really quickly in the game. And then inside it, you just have, like, one platforming challenge. They also kind of have this in Odyssey, if you've played Super Mario Odyssey, where, like, you just go into, like, a warp pipe or something, and it's like, here, do a platforming puzzle, go. Which I really appreciate, kind of bringing the game back to its roots as a platformer. But the four major levels in which you can collect multiple timepieces, some of which are these bonus small platforming challenges and so on and so forth, they all have different themes. The first one you get into, which you'll see most of the artwork if you just Google this game, is called Mafia Town. It's got a bunch of classic 3D platformer levels, collect some shit, jump up and down, beat a boss by jumping on their head, slap some bitches with an umbrella, which is your weapon, etc. Next level is like a sneaky type level. Like you have some of those kind of classic 3D games where you're walking around, you have to avoid people with a flashlight, make sure they don't detect you. And one of the time pieces is like a murder mystery. So you kind of platform around, hide around, don't get caught, and you also collect little clues. And at the end, you're like, who killed this person? Which I thought was really fun. Really well done. The third level, you can kind of do these in weird orders depending on how many time pieces you collect. It's very similar to most Mario games that if you want 100% it, you have to collect all the time pieces in each level. But to advance to the next overall level, you don't necessarily have to collect all of them. So this is the spooky level. It actually has one timepiece slash level where you're in a Luigi's Mansion type situation where you're kind of hiding from a big bad monster and it's got like, you know, scary sounds and stuff like that, and you have to run away and find keys to unlock stuff. I won't spoil all of it, but that's really fun. And it's also got some of the puzzle elements. So one of the hats you can get, also a spoiler, kind of lets you see ghost type things is the best way I can describe it. So it gives you an alternate view, and sometimes you have to turn it on, turn it off at various points to solve puzzles and also do platforming challenges. The last level is a combination of all levels. It's really beautiful up in the sky. There's like hookshot ziplining, all the stuff. Platforming challenges, boss fights, puzzles, everything you can kind of want. They kind of just like blow it out. There's not like a lot of... It's not super cohesive. Like the other ones have like a really well-defined theme. The theme of this is just like crazy stuff up in the sky. But it's really fun to do. And after that, there's like a final boss battle and stuff you expect from a game. Overall, compared to like, I played some of Yooka-Laylee and I just didn't finish it because I didn't think it was as good as A Hat in Time. I think A Hat in Time is one of the best 3D platformers I've ever played, even though it's short. It's my only complaint is I wish I could play like 5 more levels of it. So go buy it. It's like 20 or 30 bucks on Steam. You could get it for your console, you know, do you, but also play this game if you like 3D platformers.
I'll tell you what, if it came to Switch, I would buy it in a heartbeat.
Same. I would, like I've watched the videos, this game looks adorable, and normally I hate platformers, but Scott's sold me on this game before, so I may have to give it a go.
All right, Scott, will you port that game to Switch for me?
Yeah, I'm on please? It right now.
Yeah. Scott, you can do that, right?
Scott, will you pour that game on me?
No.
Will Scott do what now?
You said
well,
port.
Scott.
And I
who
thought
knew
that you
were
said
such a man about pour. Town.
So I asked Scott to pour this game.
Okay, I think we're done.
Cake boss.
Yeah. I like this yeah. segment. This idea.
Cool.
Well, yeah, it worked.
We'll come back to it. So that is our show today. Thank you very much for listening. You can find us on Facebook and Tumblr at Brought to the Table. You can find us on Twitter at To the Table Pod. You can send us your own submissions for the show. We had one last week from a good, very best listener of the show, Amy. You can send us your submissions and have you be our very good best listener of the show. At brought to the table@gmail.com. If you are listening to us on some sort of platform and not through Kevin, our carrier pigeon, please don't forget to subscribe to us. I'm pretty sure there's going to be a button around in the area you're listening
yeah,
to.
Yeah, we're adding a subscribe button to Kevin. It's a little heavy, so we've got to reduce the weight so we can carry it. But that is coming.
But it's also got like a fun noise to go with it. Like a that was easy button, but a you subscribed kind of like voice line.
Yeah, it's really cool.
We don't pay Kevin enough.
We don't
pay
Kevin enough.
We don't pay Kevin. We don't pay Kevin.
Shit, I gotta go feed. I have to go feed Kevin. Anyway,
Carter, no.
So listen, he's fine for now. He's trying to get out of his cage. He really wants to hurt me right now. Anyways, so please don't forget to subscribe so that you know Kevin doesn't kill me and whatever, and you never miss an episode. Also, please rate us on iTunes or wherever because that really helps us a lot. Thank you for coming to our table. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, happy time. The TLC, the tender love and content.